Facebook.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Good day, sir. Good day, sir. I said good day. It has been a good day. Except I had a frickin' bee fly up my nose today. An angry bee fly up my nose and inject venom up my nose. Oh, boy, that was fun. That was fun. Didn't get the stinger in, though, so that was, you know, it made it not as bad. It was just momentarily awful, but it was, that was unexpected. So we had some stormy weather a little bit, and as you guys know, cactuses out here in the cactus farm get knocked over from time to time, and I got to get the pieces and replant them because you can just propagate that way. And so I was doing that, and I guess I was a little too close to a beehive that was already kind of sketched out from the thunder. And I think one of the guard bees was like, he must be the one making this thunderous noise that's so scary. Flew right into my beard. And I'm sitting there like, slow, what the, you know, and it's making like the angry bee sound. It wasn't like, oh, I'm a busy bee getting like pollen from the flowers. And, oh, I just got stuck in your beard. No. It was like attack mode bee. And I'm sitting there going, what the fuck? And it's like burrowing in and I'm trying to slap it around. And it went up one of my nostrils. And I'm like, what? And so I start slapping my face and I, basically snot rocketed out of my face. The whole time, I'm like running. I wish I had video of that. You guys would never get to see it. But I wish I had video of that. And then like, I'm sitting there like, oh God, what the fuck? What the fuck? Like, what the fuck was that? What was that? I was like, oh no. I'm pretty sure I got stung because my nose feels like it's on fire now. My whole face now feels like it's on fire. Oh, no. But, it subsided really quickly. I mean, like a minute or two later, right? and there's no sensitive spot. Like that nostril feels like a little bit like on fire, like a little bit. So I think what happened is that bee tried to get like a sting in, and just some of the sting juice came squirting out right up my nostril, and then I snot rocketed it out before I could like land the stinger in there or what, I don't know. But yeah, that was nice. That was my day. That was my day. So, oh yeah, I did a lot of bee stuff today too. And the weird thing was, I did hive inspections on all my hives today, and they were all pretty chill and friendly. Pretty, they were busy little bees, because the pollen on the desert plants is starting to come back now that the desert rains. Because we get the cool thing about living in the desert. There's a lot of not cool things about living in the desert, but one of the cool things about living in the desert is you get kind of two springs, which doesn't make up for like how bad the summer is, but it is kind of like nice. Unless, of course, you're a big fan of fall, you don't get like the leaves changing and falling down. You don't get like the autumn, like the cozy autumn. You never get that because there's no leaves to fall off. Like there's no like maple trees or anything like that, right? But instead, you get like a second spring. So you get like a bunch of rain that comes in, a bunch of flowers rebloom, everything turns green, and then it slowly dies until it's winter. So right now I'm trying to take advantage of that. I want to make sure all the bees had enough space in their hives to store the pollen that they were rapidly bringing in. And everything was cool. I did two splits. Pretty late in the year to do it, but I whatever, fuck it. And they both accepted their new queen. They were cranking away, so everything's good. So if I can get all these hives to survive the winter, I can do splits in spring, and I'll actually have enough honey possibly by the end of next year to offer some honey to you guys. So that would be kind of fun. That would be kind of fun. Make some awesome labels for that. Black-pilled honey. I don't know. I think I want to call it something else. But that could be fun. That could be fun. Anyway, let's get on with the show. We're up to part four, and there's gonna be a lot more parts. I have really kind of I'll have to thank the people that put together this Healing Hate series. Because it has forced me to really take a look at a lot of the pro-white boomer waffen. Because a lot of times it does kind of feel like, because it wasn't mainstream, right? But it kind of feels like, because of the lack of internet access, and because unless you had friends or family who were directly related to the movement, whether it's the militia movement or whether it's the people who were worried about demographic replacement back in as early as the 70s and 80s, you didn't ever really hear about it because these guys weren't making it on TV, and if they were making it on TV, they would find the cringiest people they could find and put them on Donahue and make them wear their KKK outfits. They looked extra, cringe. And the whole thing was cartoonish. So you kind of got the sense there weren't any like competent people that were worried about demographic replacement back in the 70s and 80s, and it kind of makes you kind of pissed off at boomers as a whole, because it just seemed like they were all asleep at the wheel. Well, in going over this documentary, I mean, they're so hell-bent on, you know what the funny thing is? I think part of it is they are hell-bent on trying to tie white supremacy to January 6th. But honestly, I think another part of this is the people that have produced this series are the same motherfuckers who have been wanting to relive. Like, boomers have always wanted to relive the past. In the 90s, it was all about, oh, Woodstock, the 60s, we're a flower power. That's all you fucking heard about. It never fucking stopped. In the 80s, before that, it was about the 1950s and the 50s diners, and you know, like let's rem, because they knew that. I think already they knew the future was not going to be good. Because if you look back at the 50s and 60s, what were they talking about? They were talking about, it was the Jetsons, the flying cars. They were talking about the future all the fucking time. Think of all the movies about the, you know, in the year 2000, we will have moving sidewalks and robot butlers. That's all that shit was. But by the 70s, late 70s, like I told you, like I think the world went to shit somewhere in the late 70s. I haven't pinpointed a date yet, but sometime in the late 70s, maybe even a little before that, someone opened the literal gates of hell. Like the bad goes way, you know, goes way further back, but like the sharp the sharp decline somewhere in the 70s. And from that point on, the boomers just, it's like they knew. They knew there was nothing good to look forward to. So everything had to start being about the past. And it's still that way. It's still that way. So I think that because they're still in fucking charge. They're still in charge. And so I think in the same way that in the 90s they sat there jerking each other off about the 1960s, this is an example of, because look, it's the same guy, like the ESPLC co-founder, D's Nuts, whatever his name is, something D, whatever. We're gonna have clips of him because he's involved yet again, right? It's the same fucking guys. It's the same guys. They refuse to let go of power. It's the same guys that like that raided Trump's Mar-a-Lago. It's the same fucking guys. But because it's them, it's them reminiscing about the past. It's like they want to somehow attach meaning to this war on whiteness that they started waging sometime in the late 70s. Well, I mean, well before that, but like it really it started having opposition in the late 70s. Excuse me. Because they keep calling back to the same things, and but anyway, enough talk. Let's get in the mood. Let's get in the mood for healing hate.
It is a story decades in the making.
They call themselves
in the Aryan Nation.
Desperate. Angry, destructive. The nation stopped in its tracks.
Angry mob of supporters.
The most sacred symbol of America's democracy attacked.
Let's burn this shit down.
A nation already deeply divided over politics, race, and economic inequality. And now the claim of a stolen election. Extremists inciting rage. Some using violence. How did we get here? What fuels their fury? How grave is the threat to democracy? How do we heal the hate?
How indeed? How do we heal? The funny thing is, they don't even attempt to answer that. They do not, this entire series, they never attempt to say, how do we reconcile with these people that we're demonizing? No, of course not. So anyway, in this episode, they actually jump right into Ashley Babbitt, which I was a little surprised by, until I saw what they were gonna fucking do with it. It's a little bit shocking, and it actually kind of ties back in with even the Twilight Zone episode that I covered last stream. They've been going by the same playbook since they wrote the script to that Twilight Zone episode.
A lady was just shot. She might be dying right now.
35-year-old Air Force veteran and QAnon supporter Ashley Babbitt was shot by a Capitol Police officer.
Yes, they had to make sure they threw in the QAnon thing. So they open up with Ashley Babbitt getting shot. they immediately try to tie it to, you know, evil, scary QAnon and also Trump's comments on January 6th enraged her. Now, look, here's the thing. There's a kernel of truth in both those statements. If she had not been following, you know, Q, chances are she'd still be alive. Right? But it's kind of like saying, you know, if you hadn't worn that dress, you probably wouldn't have got raped. It doesn't change the fact that some, I mean, 50, you'll see this guy, 50 fucking IQ diversity hire was in charge and was wetting his pants and shot an unarmed woman. And quite possibly could have hit fellow officers that were standing right next to her as she was doing this. In fact, they thought they were getting shot at from the crowd. One of the guys puts his rifle up, and he's like, "What the fuck? Where'd that shot come from?"
In the wake of the riots, some on social media call her a hero and a martyr.
See, there it is. It's the martyr. Just like last stream. Last stream, we went over a Twilight Zone episode written by Rod Serling, directed by someone Rosenberg, I forget his first name, about the white nationalists rising up in America. And this was early to mid-60s, this episode. I want to say 1963, but I'm not sure. And one of the first things they say is, we need to have a martyr. We're going to kill one of our own guys because the right always needs a martyr. And I made the observation, though, and it seems like the right never clings to martyrs. The left always, I mean, George Floyd, for fuck's sake, right? I mean, it seems like every 6 months there's a new martyr, you know? The jogger, what's his name? Ahmaud Arbery. Who was the one during the Obama administration? The gentle giant. What's his nut? Who cares? Some fucking glad he's dead motherfucker. Every 6 months, some crazy, you know, literally piece of trash, worthless black guy resists arrest or does something fucked up and gets shot. And had he been anyone else, like had he been a white guy, he wouldn't even make the news. But the left seizes on these opportunities and they rally behind these people. The same is not true of the right. Now, I don't understand why. I don't understand why. But what you see, and I remember this happening because I remember when she, like I was, you know, like basically live, not live streaming this, but when January 6th was going on, I live streamed that night, I'm pretty sure. But when January 6th was going on, I was posting videos as everything was happening on Telegram, and I think I was still on Twitter at the time. And I remember when she got shot and trying to find out what her name was and posting, you know, her name was Ashley Babbitt. And trying to get behind the idea that, look, this is a white woman who was worried that the federal government had overstepped its authority. Something that most even boomers are starting to be like, huh, maybe maybe there's something to that. Now that Boomer Jesus got raided, right? She never turned into a martyr. A lot of what I heard was, well, you know, she was just a fucking Q-tard, serves her right. Look, if anyone has contempt for Q-tards, it's me. It doesn't matter if she's a Q. You're gonna purity spiral about a dead lady? That's the problem with the right. The right is so busy fighting itself, it'll never end up fighting its opponents, ever. Even a dead woman isn't good enough for you, for a lot of these people. Anyway, so they say in this healing hate, oh, you know, the right needs a martyr.
You deserve answers and you deserve justice. God bless Ashley's incredible memory and God bless America.
Yeah, of course they need to pin it on Trump as much as possible.
Chaos erupted inside the Capitol this afternoon. A mob intent on blocking Joe Biden's presidency stormed the building. In the hallway, the echo of a gunshot rang out, and a woman apparently hit.
Let an active shooter!
Now, I think the bitrate's pretty craptastic right now, but it will smooth out eventually. When it does, what you'll see on your screen is one of the Capitol, I don't know if he's Capitol Police or if he's FBI or who what he is, but that's him raising his rifle to the Capitol Police officer diversity hire that shot and murdered Ashley Babbitt on January 6th. The only person murdered on January 6th was someone that was a literal black Capitol Police officer murdering a white woman who was there to protest. Mostly peaceful protest. And one of his fellow officers is raising his rifle to him because he's so, like, surprised by the gunfire. Now, Judicial Watch, you know, you could say they're too pro-Trump or they're, you know, obviously they're not, they're definitely not, like, worried about, or at least as far as I know, they're not concerned with demographics, although I would say a lot of their funding, it's not coming from based black guys, you know. they do some good work. Judicial Watch does some good work. We wouldn't know about a lot of the stuff that we know about the deep state if it wasn't for Judicial Watch. It's actually one of the very few right-wing organizations that uses legal warfare against their political opponents. There's just not a lot of right-wing lawfare going on. They're just not. And they're one of the very few people doing it. So this is them talking about their interactions with the DOJ as in respects to who shot Ashley Babbitt. Because you got to remember, after Ashley Babbitt got shot, they wouldn't say who did it. They wouldn't even say who did it. Which is a whole lot different if you think about when one of these black criminals gets shot while resisting arrest, while aiming a gun at an officer, while stabbing an old lady, you know, while doing something that gets you shot, while posing an imminent danger to everyone around them, you find out about the officer right away. Everyone heard the name. Everyone knew Derek Chauvin. There was no effort to hide the name of Derek Chauvin.
First up, we have new documents, and they're better than documents. They're actual audio-visual recordings of the police investigation of the death of Ashley Babbitt. Included in the materials is a cell phone video that I think is new of the Ashley Babbitt shooting. We have audios of the witness interviews, including that of Lieutenant Byrd, who refused to talk to investigators, as best we can tell. And plus, we have photos of Lieutenant Byrd, who was the shooter of Ashley Babbitt. There's a headshot photo, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. So how did we get here? We sued, for instance, for the autopsy results of Officer Sicknick, who everyone, the big media and the left, lied about the circumstances of his death. And it looked like the medical examiner here in D.C. sat on the truth about his death, which is it wasn't a homicide.
See, that's the other officer. Remember, they were saying, oh, yeah, they the crowd beat him to death with a fire extinguisher or something like that, right? Remember that was for like weeks? They were talking about, oh, yeah, the rioters, the insurrectionists, they beat an officer to death with a fire extinguisher. Yeah, that didn't happen at all. And they knew that didn't happen. They just wouldn't release the autopsy report that said, no, he just died of natural causes like the next day, completely unrelated.
And it was that material was only released after we sued. And we also sued about records about the shooting death of Ashley Babbitt. Here we have a police officer involved shooting of an unarmed woman, 14-year veteran, who was no immediate threat to anyone, and silence, crickets. The Justice Department refused to do anything. The Capitol Police Department, who was run by the politicians on the Hill, namely Nancy Pelosi, refused to do anything. And gave him a free pass. And in fact, his name was kept secret from the American people for months until he voluntarily came forward to talk about this and try to defend his decision to shoot and kill Ashley Babbitt.
Now let's have a look at some of that interview. Again, chat, I'd like you to type what you think this guy's IQ is after hearing him talk.
My name is Michael Byrd. I'm a lieutenant for the United States Capitol Police. And on January the 6th, I was the commander for the House Chamber Section in charge of the security for the United States House of Representatives.
All right, we got 68. That's probably pretty accurate, honestly. 75, 30, come on, he wouldn't be able to put a suit on if it was 36. 82, honestly, it's probably in the 60s. Listen, the guy can't even talk.
My name is Michael Byrd. I'm a lieutenant for the United States Capitol Police. And on January the 6th, I was the commander for the House Chamber Section in charge of the security for the United States House of Representatives.
All right, so they hired this guy, basically a guard dog with a suit on. And the only reason why you get to find out who he even is. And by the way, that applies to Ashley Babbitt had family. So Ashley Babbitt, her family's like, well, wait, hold on. Someone shot her and killed her? Who? Government won't say until he decides to say.
Typically, when an officer is involved in a high-profile shooting, that officer is identified publicly. Why wasn't your name identified?
Yeah, I wonder why. Why wasn't your name given out to the public? You know what's weird about this fucking guy, too? He blinks one eye at a time. Like, it's really obvious in this one spot. And I think it has something to do. I think it's body language for what he's saying. But it's just, he can't even blink both eyes at the same time.
Why wasn't your name identified?
I believe it was because of the threats, the vile threats, conversations, and chatter that's been expressed about me and my actions.
Nigga, why? Nigga, why? Nigga, why? Why? Nigga, why? Nigga, why? Nigga, why?
Yeah. Oh, it's about the threats. Yeah, I'm sure Derek Chauvin didn't have any threats against him. I'm sure, like, all the other officers and all the other shootings of he's just a good boy, they never had any threats, right? None?
Talked about, you know, killing me, cutting off my head, you know, very vicious and cruel things.
Racist things?
There were some racist attacks as well.
Nigga, what? Nigga, what? Nigga, nigga, what? What? Nigga, what? Nigga, what? Nigga, nigga, what?
Racist things. Very racist. It was all very racist.
Racist things?
Yep.
I was cleared by the DOJ. And
he was cleared by the DOJ, the same DOJ that raided Mar-a-Lago. The same DOJ that, somehow Epstein just escaped custody one way or another. We'll never know.
I was cleared by the DOJ and FBI. I believe I showed the utmost courage on January 6th.
Nigga, what? Nigga, what? Nigga, nigga, what? What? Nigga, what? Nigga, what? Nigga.
He showed courage. Did you guys see that courage? See, look, there's the courage. There's his courageous act. Shooting someone who's like behind a barricaded door. A 90-pound female. Look at that. Look at all that courage coming out of his gun. So that's a lot of courage.
The fact that I did, as the protest escalated into a riot and the protesters had breached the rioters had breached the Capitol building, and they made their way towards the house side of the Capitol. There was reports of shots fired through the house main door onto the floor of the chamber.
And that turned out not to be the case.
Nigga, what? Nigga, what? Nigga.
And
that turned out not to be the case. Yeah, all that happened was that gay Capitol Police officer was getting an ouchie against the door, and they were having to fight, like, fist fight, like, you know, random people, some of whom were probably federal agents. Anyway. Yeah, so that's the man who shot Ashley Babbitt, and he's totally free. Yeah, fuck, he probably got, like, a promotion. Probably got a medal. Nancy Pelosi probably brought him, cupcakes the next day.
So Judicial Watch had a lawsuit against the D.C. Police Department and the Office of Medical Examiner for records. And you may recall, a few weeks ago, we received records from the police investigation after months of litigation from the D.C. police. And they include witness interviews that make it pretty clear, because the officers were right near Lieutenant Byrd, that Ashley Babbitt was not armed. No one saw any arm, any arms in her hands. So there was no mistake. Oh, I thought she had a weapon. Oh, no, she didn't have a weapon. Now, they did find a knife in her pocket after she died, but that didn't have any impact on Lieutenant Byrd's decision to shoot her.
I believe I showed the utmost courage on January 6th.
So courageous.
And presented no imminent threat, and Byrd wasn't there alone. In fact, there were police officers on the other side of the window who just could have pulled her away. Yet he shot and killed her.
I believe I showed the utmost courage on January 6th.
Did you see the blinky thing? This is what I'm talking about. I want you to see. Look at that. He blinks one eye at a time. Like, what the hell's that shit? Look at that courageous motherfucker. Like that's who they put in charge. That's who they put in charge of security.
And as best we can tell, no one ever interviewed him, at least in the police department of the Metropolitan Police Department, about his decision to shoot Ashley Babbitt. Of course, he talked to the media about it, but he didn't talk to law enforcement. Isn't that interesting?
I was cleared by the DOJ and FBI. I believe I showed the utmost courage on January 6th.
So, yeah, so it's no wonder that they don't spend a whole lot of time on Ashley Babbitt. They just try to make the point that Ashley Babbitt, she's now a martyr for the extreme violent far right.
She became a martyr for violent extremists.
She's a martyr for violent extremists. Yeah, they're obsessed with this martyr thing. Of course, they got Trump. Trump finally, after not mentioning her at all, finally mentions her. And I want you to look at the demographics standing behind Trump. Because Trump knew who shot her. Trump knew he couldn't condemn. Like, see, this is how fucking anti-white America is now. Is Trump couldn't condemn the black cop that shot his white, you know, Q following supporter without like a legion of black people standing behind him when he did it.
The person that shot Ashley Babbitt, boom, right through the head, just boom. There was no reason for that.
So after Trump finally mentions it, but they, you know, in the video they make it sound like, oh, Trump, he's trying to make her into a martyr. Look, the Q people, they've got leather jackets. And, you know, on January 6th, you know, he was telling them, he was saying, like, you got to be strong if you want to fight against these people. And that made her crazy. Made her crazy.
To understand why the far right needs Ashley Babbitt and how it feeds off a cult of martyrdom, we need only consider the case of Timothy McVeigh, also a military veteran, but one whose beliefs were so extreme they led to mass murder.
See? Ashley Babbitt is going to lead to mass murder. And it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous, A, that they're trying to say that Ashley Babbitt is some kind of martyr. But then check this out. This is from the series. You know, because, like, you always see Timothy McVeigh memes all over the place, right? And so for those of you just listening, they have a Timothy McVeigh with Pepe meme. And it says, smug McVeigh and smug Pepe realize that when the government attacks Christianity, their buildings get dropped like it's hot. Now, I don't know. I suspect this particular meme, especially because of its lack of meme magic, was created in a federal lab. And then just like this meme right here, meme in quotes, Timothy McVeigh and the Tea Party bringing down the government one brick at a time. Yeah, because everyone knows that Timothy McVeigh is like this big hero on the right. But they need him to be. They need him to be. So after talking about Timothy McVeigh and how Ashley Babbitt is like Timothy McVeigh somehow, and how Ashley Babbitt is going to lead to mass murder because all the right-wingers are obsessed with her death, just like they were obsessed with Timothy McVeigh, and just like Timothy McVeigh was obsessed with the Waco incident, which he also had his martyr, because all right-wing, you know, people, they all have their martyrs. They start talking about a KKK guy by the name of Louis Beam. Louis Beam. Now, Louis Beam's kind of an interesting character. Louis Beam was a Vietnam vet. In Vietnam, he was a Huey machine gunner. So he basically hung out the side of a helicopter and gunned down the Viet Cong all day long, right? And when he came back after the, you know, fighting in Vietnam, he noticed that the country was changing demographically, partially because of the Hart-Celler Act, but also because of the refugees that America was accepting into the country after Vietnam. So in the same way that when America fled Afghanistan after just fighting in Afghanistan, you know, to protect freedom or something, like no one knows, right? For 10, really, well, we do know. It's to so that they could enrich the military contractors for 10 straight years and just spend trillions and trillions of taxpayer money on government contracts and this, like, just this endless grift. While at the same time using Afghanistan as a massive testing ground for military technology. After we left, we brought a lot of fucking Afghanistan or Afghanis back to America. A lot of people don't know this shit. There is housing set up at multiple military bases throughout the United States right now. Big tent cities, some of which have populations of 20 to 30,000 people. 20 to 30,000 Afghan. Look, that's just one each base. The full number is something like, well, I mean, the official, I think, number is somewhere like around 250,000 people. So who really fucking knows? But in the same way, when America left Afghanistan, they took literally everyone they could possibly shove onto an aircraft back with them to America. Because, you know, why let a good crisis go to waste, right? Now that you're fleeing, you know what? Hey, let's try to maximize this operation. You know, let's have some synergy, you know, between our grift, you know, operation that we've got going on, spending all this money on military contractors and just fucking milking the white working class. Why don't we also, now that we're done and we're having to leave because our woke military doesn't stand a chance against these guys with rags in their heads holding AR or AK-47s, driving Toyotas around, let's get a bunch of non-whites and throw them into our society. We'll just pay for their medical treatment. We'll give them loans to start businesses. We'll put them all throughout the country and devastate the founding stock of America even further. Well, in the same way that's going on, it is going on right now, but it's already gone on. Yeah, like it's already done. There was a similar operation going on with Vietnam. And they used the same fucking instead of white guilt, it's war guilt. What they say is, you know that war that no one wanted to do but us? Well, we can't just go over there and blow up their country and then just leave them. These are people that helped us out. These people were on the payroll. These people fought side by side with us. You can't just leave them. A, yes, you can. B, we didn't want to fucking be there in the first place. Let them stay at your house. But that's not what they did. The government took in a bunch of these Vietnamese people and gave them checks. Some of them they gave small business loans to. Same sort of deal. You know, and then set them up in different parts of the country. And one of those parts of the country is a small shrimping town in Texas, which we'll go into in a second. Well, anyway, to give you an idea, so they mention Louis Beam and they start to talk about his role in what happened in Texas with some of these Vietnamese immigrants. But I wanted you to get kind of a taste for him. The thing, Look, I have some criticisms of him. I mean, he's still around. I mean, I think he's still alive. I don't think he's, you know, actively doing this kind of activism or whatever you want to call it. Maybe he is, but I, you know, not that I know of. But he was a good speaker. He was a good speaker, and sometimes he said some really good stuff. The problem is when the only tool that you have is a hammer, every problem starts to look like a nail. And that seems to be a common thread among a lot of the boomers in the 70s, 80s, and 90s that did try to address this problem of demographic replacement. And that's because a lot of them were Vietnam vets. They were trained killers. They were experienced killers. And their way of addressing this problem was, well, let's just go to war with the federal government. Literally. Not understanding that there's a lot of problems with that, but that's pretty much what Louis Beam was advocating. Louis Beam was advocating a kind of a decentralized guerrilla warfare against the federal government, and was very explicit about it. Like, he wasn't, you know, he didn't beat around the bush. That's the other funny thing, that you, when you go back and look at some of this stuff, that you realize culturally has changed so dramatically. And not even just stuff like this, like this guy who's pretty radical for even back, you know, for that group to be openly, you know, telling people that we're at war with the federal government. Like, it's pretty radical statements that he was making. But even stuff like the woman that produced one of the videos that I sampled bits from about the Waco incident, when she was first putting out VHS tapes, her name was Linda Thompson. She was outright saying, I think it was Linda Thompson. Did I get her last name wrong? Yeah, it's Linda Thompson. She was advocating the same thing. She was advocating, let's get the militias together. And she was a lawyer. She wanted to do it, like, legally or constitutionally, right? She wanted to get militias put together, go to Washington, D.C. And obviously this is the kind of pie-in-the-sky fantasy world solution that would never work, because it misunderstands power, right? Like, it's underestimating the power that the federal government has access to. But her whole plan was, let's get a bunch of people together, and official militias, and go arrest senators for treason. And of course, that wasn't going to go anywhere. But it's just funny how the rhetoric of the 70s, 80s, and 90s from these people was far, far and away more extreme than anything that even people Fed posting will say. And some of that isn't because they were Feds. See, in the context of today, someone starts talking like Linda Thompson or like Louis Beam here, your gut instinct is, oh, he's a Fed, he's Fed posting. Only a Fed would say that. No, I don't think you understand how much freer the speech was back then. I mean, to give you an idea, Linda Thompson blocked a presidential motorcade, physically blocked it. She had two handguns on her and an AR-15 in her car with 200 rounds. And they didn't arrest her. Not because she was a Fed, but because she was legally carrying the weapons. All this stuff that we've been covering in this PatCon series, talking about how the Feds did infiltrate patriot movements, this is why they were doing it. Because this kind of rhetoric was going on. Because these kinds of solutions were the ones being proposed. And they were so successful with PatCon and other operations that maybe go by different names, but are similar in objective. People are terrified. of even suggesting anything beyond just angrily tweeting about stuff. Anyway, here's a little bit, here's a little sample of Lewis Beam.
There is no such thing as Jewish domination. There is only white submissiveness. Refuse to submit, and there is no longer domination. So while our enemies have power over us, is where we are weak. We have given them this power. The problem is white folk. We have become a weak, uncaring, lazy, thoughtless, self-centered, greedy, materialistic people. The results of that is America. Go out the gate and see what the results is. Did you forget? You remember what it was like last time you was home, last time you was downtown, the last time you were in a public school or an institution, or the last time you watched television? You gave us that. And I gave us that. We're all guilty to one degree or another. I include myself in this because there's been times when I could have been stronger. There has been times when I could have gone further. There are times that I could have done more. So I'm responsible too. So I'm not just putting myself into this condemnation because I'm the speaker and I'm supposed to be guilty along with the audience. I'm telling you because it's true. We're too weak. We have become too soft. Tell you, most of us, really and truly, don't deserve, if we're judged by our present day actions and our present day habits and thought system and beliefs and attitudes, we don't deserve the blood we carry in our veins because it came from far better men than ourselves.
So he was, you know, he was a good speaker. And he pointed out that, look, a lot of this is on us. We've become decadent. That was just another way of saying that, right? That we've become decadent. We've been asleep at the wheel and allowing all this to go on. Now, unfortunately, and look, he admits that, look, he's been part of the problem. Unfortunately, though, his solution was therefore, and I might play another clip of another one of his speeches, but he basically said, you have to really want it. You have to be willing to go to jail. You have to be willing to die. And if you're not, then you're just a pretender. You're just here to LARP. You're just here to act like you give a fuck about this and pretend that we're at war. But really, you know, you just want to stay home and tweet angrily on the internet. You know, the 80s version of that. But like I said, he was a warrior. He was a warrior, and so he was a soldier, and so he had soldier solutions to everything. We'll see here in a second is why that wasn't effective. So what they bring up in this documentary or this series is Seadrift, Texas, which was a place where a lot of these Vietnamese immigrants were placed.
Before he became the master tactician of leaderless resistance, Lewis Beam was an ambitious Klan leader on the lookout for a chance to stoke racial tensions and win new recruits.
Do you have it in you to make the sacrifice?
In 1979, Beam saw an opportunity in a simmering confrontation between local fishermen and Vietnamese immigrants in Seadrift, Texas.
I like how it's just, oh, he saw an opportunity. No, he didn't see an opportunity. He saw the government had moved a bunch of Vietnamese people into a small white community, and it was creating problems, and the Vietnamese people murdered someone. Now, what happened was I'll play for you some news reports that'll kind of walk you through it. But basically, a bunch of Vietnamese people moved to this really small white town that got most of its money from shrimping and fishing. It was like a fishing town. And there were some unspoken rules. Because it had been that ethnic group, in fact, probably the same families had been there for several decades. And so they had some unspoken rules. Like, if I go out and I find like a good shrimping spot, you don't come and poach my spot. That's my spot now. And when the Vietnamese people came and started shrimping, they were just poaching everyone's spots. They weren't investing the time to go find it. They would just follow the guy that was investing the time to find the good spots. Because it wasn't just the white boomers that were warriors and soldiers. These guys were fucking in Vietnam too. They carried machetes. They carried weapons, guns. They threatened the white fishermen and eventually murdered one. So here's some news broadcasts I found that kind of walk you through that whole scenario, like how it went down.
No one said the adjustment of Vietnamese refugees to life in the United States would be easy. The differences in culture and customs are enormous. In one Texas community, tensions produced by those differences already have led to...
See, like how it's refugees causing problems. The formula hasn't changed. They're just doing... They've been doing this to us nonstop for... since World War II.
To bloodshed, with concern it could happen elsewhere. Bob McNamara reports.
Seadrift, a tiny Texas Gulf Coast fishing town, has never seen so much fear and anger and hate all at once.
These people, they don't think like us.
What they don't mention is I'm pretty sure that's the wife of the man they murdered.
They're just not our kind of people, and they're vicious, cruel people, and they're going to take and grab what they want at anybody's expense. They've already went as far as murder.
Bitterness was born in Seadrift when dozens of Vietnamese refugees arrived here 3 years ago. Scraping to carve out new lives, the refugees took menial jobs in the local fishing industry, trying to save enough money to buy fishing boats for themselves. And when they did, the Vietnamese were suddenly competing against native crabbers, and it was just a matter of time before tensions developed and finally exploded into violence. 35-year-old Billy Joe Applin was shot and killed, allegedly by a pair of Vietnamese brothers, in a dispute over Applin's charges the Vietnamese were poaching from the local crabbers' sea traps.
So that was the other thing they were doing. They were literally poaching. They were opening up the traps of the other fishermen and just taking the fucking crabs and shrimp and stuff out.
Killing sparked an immediate and violent wave of revenge that saw three Vietnamese fishing boats sunk in Seadrift Harbor. Fearing physical harm, most of the refugees fled town. But today, some were back at work. Hyung Mong, who speaks no English, said he had no choice but to come back.
Yeah, we want to stay here and work because we can make good money here. But we're scared, you know.
And they're scared, too, over at the house where Billy Joe Applin's folks and his sisters are living. B.T. Applin, Billy Joe's father, claims the Vietnamese brought the troubles on themselves by ignoring the local unwritten crabbing code that if a crabber finds a good spot to fish, the area is his until he abandons it.
They don't know the job. They don't know what to do. And they sit out there and they wait till you find them and then they go get them.
Town officials blame Washington for simply dumping refugees on Sea Drift and expecting them to get along.
Well, they're going to have to educate the people. Some kind of a training program, you know, to familiarize them with the laws and more the customs than the laws.
Sea Drift is not the only Gulf Coast town encountering problems with the Vietnamese. In the last few months, there have been reports of tension and trouble between native fishermen and refugees in Florida and Louisiana. Sea Drift's problems will not be solved without Washington's help. A federal mediator has been in town asking questions, but the troubles won't be cleared up soon.
At the moment, it's an impasse. Local fishermen entrenched against a group they regard as a bunch of foreigners.
Because they are a bunch of foreigners. So anyway, moving right along.
Refugee fishermen along the Gulf Coast. The trouble was sparked by charges that the Vietnamese violated unwritten fishing laws, and it was fueled by racism. In August 1979, it exploded into the shooting death of an American fisherman. Two Vietnamese brothers were acquitted in that case, but the threat of violence never disappeared. And today, as David Dick reports, that threat appears.
Yeah, so the murderers walked. They acquitted the refugees, of course, right?
To have one out.
Vietnamese refugees building another new shrimp boat on the Texas coast. But when this one's finished, Nam Nguyen Su won't fish with it. He's already arranged to sell it. 38 Vietnamese shrimpers, nearly half of those who've been fishing in the Galveston Bay area, say they're giving up as soon as they can find buyers for their boats. A situation repeated all along the Texas coast, where local shrimpers say the waters are overcrowded. Nguyen Van Nam, an army colonel in South Vietnam, a leader among refugee shrimpers here in Seabrook, Texas. He's willing to sell his boat at a heavy loss because of threats of violence from the Ku Klux Klan and its supporters.
I cannot argue because this is not my country. English is not my language. I don't speak good English as they do to argue with them. I am tired to argue. I don't like it. That's why I decide to go.
Business at Colonel Nam's fresh fish market has suffered, he says, as a result of a recent Klan rally in the area at which a mock Vietnamese shrimp boat was burned. The rally was promoted by Gene Fisher.
I went to my government and worked with them for over a year and a half, begged them to help this situation and do something about it, and they wouldn't do it. So I'm a white American. I went to the KKK. Those boats had to be taken out of the water, destroyed.
We hope to get the vessels totally out of the country. We don't.
Emery Waite, who runs a Seabrook fish house, is looking for Central American buyers of the Vietnamese boats. Waite heads a local coalition formed at the urging of the Texas governor's office to try to find a solution.
They've had pressure put on them because Mexico canceled their permits. And the Vietnamese now being in the area seem to be the thing that the American fishermen can literally get their hands on.
A poor economy, high fuel costs, depleted fishing grounds is a double-edged sword.
So anyway, they they bitch about how the evil KKK is getting involved. And so basically what happened was, after the murder, the white fishermen reached out to the Texas KKK and said, look, we're being displaced here. We're having, racial problems out here. Can you come help us? The unfortunate thing is, like I said, is their solutions to the problem were not solutions that worked. Their solutions to the problem were, we're going to go out and just intimidate them. Not understanding that, no, these refugees have the full force of the federal government behind them. The federal government is, it's a fantasy that they represent you. They represent themselves. And what they want is those refugees in your town. So that's just the way it's going to be. You're not going to intimidate the federal government with a bunch of guys with sheets on their heads. You're not. And in fact, you're not going to intimidate a whole lot of people, and you're going to look like the other by dressing up in we've gone over this in previous streams, where like the whole dressing up like a ghost thing is stupid. It makes you look ridiculous and unrelatable. And it doesn't matter how cool it looks in your culture or how respected it is in your culture and all these different titles, how they mean something. Look, if you want to do that in private and make that some kind of ritual in your club, that's one thing. But to walk around in public like that makes you look crazy. Like, what's the big complaint about Jewish influence in the West? Oh, they blend right in. You're doing the opposite of that. You're trying to stand out. So you're not going to be effective. What's effective is blending right in and appearing relatable to other people. Unless, of course, look, if you have the power, if you had, like, for example, a standing army of million, you know, a couple million people, and you could just intimidate, fucking do whatever you want, right? You could dress up in fucking gorilla costumes. People wouldn't fuck with you. They'd be like, oh shit, that's the gorilla costume guys. Don't fuck with them. But otherwise, you're just making yourself look like the other. You're looking unrelatable.
Protection from the Ku Klux Klan. Steve Croft reports. The suit filed today in Houston.
Okay, so then here's how you do wage war. Remember we were talking about Christian identity in Idaho, and the SPLC miraculously had a case where those people decided that, like, you know, for some reason, for no reason at all, you know, right, the security guards at that Christian identity camp just started chasing some lady and her son, like, for totally no reason, right? For totally no reason that has changed three different times. Anyway, then the SPLC swoops in and sues them out of existence. Because they're good at lawfare. And so it didn't matter that you were tough and you had some kind of military training camp and that you dressed up in your cool, scary costumes or whatever. At the end of the day, you lost not on a battlefield, but in a courtroom. And the same thing happened here. It was the same fucking people. The SPLC, literally the same lawyers that sued the Christian identity guys, and honestly, probably some, or at least tangentially related to this, the same lawyers suing Alex Jones, right? They probably brunched together, came in, and sued the Texas KKK out of existence.
And is believed to be the first antitrust action ever filed against the Ku Klux Klan. The Vietnamese claim that the Klan and a local fishermen's group have conspired to keep them from fishing the waters of Galveston Bay through a campaign of violence and intimidation.
The Vietnamese came to this country seeking a land of freedom where we could raise our family in peace.
Since Colonel Nguyen Van Nam and several hundred Vietnamese moved to Seabrook, Texas, they've had nothing but trouble. Three of their boats have been burned, and the Ku Klux Klan has held several rallies in which effigies of Vietnamese boats have been set up.
Now, see, again, the optics of this, if I'm some guy that some, you know, not, like, if I'm just some random white guy in Colorado somewhere, and I see this on TV, well, I don't know. Do I side with the poor immigrant guy who just wants freedom and wants to be American and just wants a place to where he can be safe? Or do I side with the guys wearing sheets on their heads and torches?
At a blaze. Mr. Beam, the grand...
And there he is. There's Morris Dees of the SPLC still around. In fact, he's part of this documentary, the Healing Hate documentary. He was interviewed for in episode 1. I'm sure he'll pop up again. He was literally the exact same lawyer that went after the Christian Identity people in Idaho. If I remember correctly, they even referenced this case in that episode. And I don't remember what the dollar amount was, but they were awarded something insane, like $6 million.
Pendragon of the Texas Ku Klux Klan has issued an ultimatum, and that is that if the fishermen are not out, the Vietnamese fishermen are not out of Galveston Bay by the 15th of May, the date shrimping season opens, he will take matters in his own hands.
51 Vietnamese boats are now for sale, but there have been no buyers. The Vietnamese say they plan to stay and fish at least through this season, and they're asking the federal government for an injunction that will guarantee their rights.
He left his rights behind him in Vietnam, and he's over here now taking my rights away from me and my friends. And I'm going to fight it.
Gene Fisher, president of the Seabrook Kima Fishermen's Coalition, maintains that the Vietnamese are the ones that are violating the law by not obeying fishing regulations. Fisher and the Klan are making no promises.
Texas citizens will not yield their birthright, their jobs, and their livelihood without a fight. Period.
The Grand Dragon would not say how the Klan plans to fight. He says he would like to avoid violence, but would not rule it out. The Vietnamese are hoping it won't come to that. They are counting on the federal government to prevent violence, even if it means sending in federal marshals to protect them. Steve Croft, CBS News.
Resources of Galveston Bay have led.
See, this is what drives me crazy. Is like, what's wrong with just looking like that all the time? You know, like just look like that all the time. Don't put the costume on. This looks fine. You look totally relatable. So, and look, a lot of it isn't very, like this guy right here, not this guy, that guy, you know, he's not the most eloquent guy in the world. I probably wouldn't have put him in front of a camera. Cause he is starting to sound like that Dutker Jibs guy. No, a better way of putting it would be like, look, we've been here a long time. We've got a way of doing things, but we also have regulations that we have to comply with. And what you've done is you've injected a bunch of people into our population, given them government loans, given them cash outright. And then you're not enforcing things, not only when they're not following the regulations that we've had to comply with forever, they fucking killed a guy. They murdered one of us, and you acquitted the murderers. Because you're so hell-bent on making this refugees welcome bullshit work. You're willing to look the other way. You don't want there to be any problems. You sure as shit don't want the American public to think there's anything wrong with this, because you know this is you're doing, and you also know you're not going to stop doing it. But you know, honestly, I feel like they did the best they could with what they had.
Rule it out. The Vietnamese are hoping it won't come to that.
By Vietnamese shrimpers, led by former South Vietnamese Colonel Nguyen Van Nam, against the Texas Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, led by Grand Dragon Louis Beam. The defendants also included American shrimpers alleged to have committed acts of intimidation and harassment against the Vietnamese fishing on Galveston Bay. The attorney for the Vietnamese, Morris Dees, of a group called the Alabama Klan Watch, shifted the focus of the hearing from merely alleged mistreatment of Vietnamese shrimpers to other Klan activity. Videotape of a Klan paramilitary training camp in Texas was introduced as evidence, how to stage an ambush, the use of automatic weapons. The photographer, Wayne Derrick, a graduate of Rice University, shot the tape as a class project. The youth attended a Klan rally at which Grand Dragon Beam made the statement, which was also shown in court.
I can speak most emphatically and positively that the Ku Klux Klan is more than willing to select out of the ranks of American fishermen some of your more hardy souls and send them through our training camps. And when you come out of that, they'll be ready for the Vietnamese.
Photographs taken last...
See, stuff like this. You know, cruising around in a shrimping boat, dressed like that, holding rifles with a fake Vietnamese guy hanging from the ship in a noose. Not a good look. Not a good look. And look, all you were trying to do was intimidate the Vietnamese, yeah, that would totally work. But that doesn't intimidate the FBI. That doesn't intimidate the SPLC. They're going to use it against you in court. And they did.
Last month of a shrimp boat loaded with robed and heavily armed Klansmen were also introduced as evidence. The boat was seen in the Seabrook, Texas area where many Vietnamese shrimpers are located. A decision on the request for a preliminary injunction against the Klan and others is expected today. David Dick, CBS.
See, the thing is, you could say the pen is mightier than the sword, but the media is mightier than the assault rifle, unfortunately. Because not only do they have the media reporting this in a obviously biased way, and here's another report. This was from even the local news was reporting it in a biased way.
Tonight, the local Ku Klux Klan staged a rally in Santa Fe just off Highway 6 with the idea being to raise some money for a legal defense fund. That money going to defend some local Klansmen named in a suit by Vietnamese fishermen.
The suit claims harassment and threats by Klansmen and some American fishermen against Vietnamese refugee fishermen using Galveston Bay. The rally raised money for the defense fund even though...
Okay, I will have to say the camo Klan's outfit is kind of cool. That's a little cool. I'm just kidding.
Even though Klan Chief Louis Beam claims the KKK and the Vietnamese have come to terms for a peaceful settlement of their differences.
Yeah, I hate to disappoint everybody, but I don't hate Vietnamese. I've fought for them in Vietnam, shed my blood, sweat, and tears for their freedom. And since they've been here, I've worked with former Vietnamese veterans in projects of mutual interest and concern.
Meanwhile, this gathering had almost more media people attending it than Klan's people. The Klan has discovered Madison Avenue, though some of the news people are reluctant to participate.
How do you feel about covering events like this?
I don't know. It's just we're working on a series right now. So,
see, why do you think, Klan guys, that the media, there's more media than there were you guys? Why do you think there's so many? Why do you think they're so interested in shooting? You think that they're gonna bring our case to the American people? Is that what you were thinking? Because that's not what was going on. What was going on is they were getting images like this. Like they were basically saying, "Look, fucking Cobra Commander is down here. Cobra Commander is down here harassing these poor immigrants." These poor immigrants, they're just trying to be here for freedom. And Cobra fucking Commander comes down here. So anyway, and if that's not enough, you're also up against people who have the funding to produce movies. They made a movie about it.
That's what this whole town lives on. That's what this whole town lives on.
Man, that ain't much shrimp for 10 hours work. These gooks been raping the bay.
My boy bought the VC over there. Now they're right here in Texas taking the bread out of our mouth.
We defend everybody all over the world, but there's no protection for any American.
We just want to have a chance to make our living, to be Americans.
I got me a boat out there. I'm about to lose it to loan sharks on account of some people doing business with Vietnamese.
Bank turned me down. I'm going to lose her.
Honey, you're going to get that loan. You know I'd give you that money if I had. On a kid?
Why are you sticking up for these people? Why?
America or Americans! America or Americans! America or Americans!
I don't want you hurt. I still care about you.
Here in Texas, tensions continue to mount between Anglo fishermen.
So, here you want to see some choice scenes from Alamo Bay. Big budget production, big names. Came out 1985. They were able to put it together pretty quick. Once again, how come the right never does this? There was no the right's perspective version of this. Why? Because the right doesn't have the fucking money. Let's see who was behind this. Alamo Bay. Alamo Bay, 1985. Let's see. Written by Alice Arlen. Oh, she's well, it doesn't really say. What else did she write? I don't know who that is. Written by or directed by Louis Malle. Let's see here. He's a French guy. Born into a wealthy industrialist family. Oh, but he's Catholic. He's Catholic. Produced by, let's see here. Edited by. Yeah, believe it or not, at least as far as I can tell, not a whole lot of the tribe involved, at least with the big point men type stuff. But here's what's funny. The budget was $5 million fucking dollars. $5 million. And they only brought in $380,000. So it was a total fucking flop. But they just ate the costs. They were willing to throw close to pretty much all the budget just went away. I mean, if you spend $5 million on something and only get $380,000 back, that's, you know, you might as well, you just burn $4.5 million. But it was worth it. Just like Twitter didn't make money for 10 years straight. For the same reason, it's worth it. It's worth just burning money if you can change hearts and minds. And these are the kinds of look at this, look at the scenes that are in this movie here.
Another one of them cutting through the yard again.
Hey, you, get out of here!
Howdy.
Huh? What'd you say?
Howdy. I'm looking for the Vietnamese people.
You're standing on my damn lawn. I ought to shoot you.
So basically, you know, just a happy, nice, non-threatening Vietnamese guy's walking by, and, you know, the evil white man's just like, I'm gonna fucking murder you, like, already.
Thank you, folks. Have a nice day.
And he's just so innocent. He's just, like, still smiling. Oh, okay. Well, have a nice day. Bye-bye. See, and then he just goes on a rampage, just starts randomly, he just goes out on his boat and starts fucking shooting him with his rifle. Like, the opposite of what actually happened, right? And this is my favorite scene. My favorite scene, because it ties in exactly with a reality that's not so pretty.
Why are you sticking up for these people? Huh? Why?
The treacherous white woman.
I gotta go see Wally and Corpus.
So the treacherous white woman sides automatically with the newcomers. Meanwhile, at the Klan rally,
after the goat! 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 After the goat!
And then this dramatic scene. He's staring down the white man. Go ahead. Do it, Whitey. Oh no, treacherous white woman again. So, treacherous white woman makes it so he can't do it. And the funny thing is, this is actually has a little bit of reality to it. You see, the daughter of the man that the Vietnamese murdered, they killed her dad. She's interviewed by the makers of this Healing Hate documentary. And listen to the words of the treacherous white woman.
I'm Beth Applin Martin, and my dad was killed in 1979 by Vietnamese fishermen that started a pretty serious reign of terror along the Gulf Coast against the Vietnamese by the KKK. There were 1 to 2 men on the bow of each of those boats with machetes. Some of them had it in their teeth and feet up on the edge, and they were saying, "We'll kill your kids in front of you and then kill you first." And, you know, dad's talking about, "Yeah, I'm gonna cut your throat." You know, I mean, it was a serious ordeal. The anti-refugee sentiment started getting whipped up by the KKK.
The anti-refugee sentiment was whipped up by the KKK. Not the fact that they murdered your dad. Okay. Okay, but go on.
And they had representatives going out into all these small little communities, recruiting new membership because of it, and, stirring up this anti-immigrant sentiment.
Again, has nothing to do with the fact that they murdered your dad. But go on.
Beth Applin regrets her family's support for the anti-immigrant fervor that drove the Vietnamese out of Seadrift.
Many years after, I went through a box of the stuff that my mother kept and came across letters from government officials. Also, it would seem I had family members who were working to establish a white nationalist organization. The National Organization of the American Spirit elected Rudy Applin. That was my dad's oldest brother. After years and years of whites fishing along the Texas coast, the government has brought in Vietnamese replacements for them. I mean, they're talking about, yeah, we've heard that replacement thing today.
See? Even though the federal government brought in immigrants that murdered her dad, she's like, "Oh, yeah, white replacement. Like, that's a thing." I'm telling you, nothing is like the treachery of the treacherous white woman. That's They killed her dad, and she's still like virtue signaling. She's one of those women that gets raped and still wants to say refugees welcome. It's insane. I don't know. This is why they shouldn't be allowed to vote or have any kind of power.
The same things they're saying today they said 45 years ago.
She's just so disappointed. So disappointed. So anyway, it's funny that she said that. The same things they're saying today, they said 45 years ago. Someone in chat mentioned that Louis Beam looked like, I think the term was VHS Nick Fuentes. And you're going to like this. So they said this looks like VHS Nick Fuentes. Well, look at this next clip. Where is that? Listen to what they're saying.
Can you feel the strength?
White power!
White victory!
White victory!
White power!
White power!
America first!
America first!
Yes, they literally said America first. And of course, that's why they put it in this documentary, so that you would make the connection and be like, oh my God, it's happening again. It's happening again. Ay, ay, ay. So anyway, and then it then goes on from there. We're going to cover the next part of the documentary. It's like it's going to be its own episode. So we'll do that next stream. They go into the order, which was a group of well, I guess white nationalists, you could say, that were holding up banks and robbing armored cars and stuff like that and using the money to fund their operation. And then the feds, like the feds often do, burned one of them alive and said, whoops, it must have been a flare. We shot some flares off and it must have burned them alive in that house on accident, as we often do. But then, after they talk, after they play like the him saying America first, they make sure to show, oh, look, and it all comes back to January 6th. And then they use this photo that will 100% be used in textbooks. This 100%. Well, I don't know that they use textbooks anymore, but this will be the image that children are shown in public schools when they're taught about the Great Insurrection on January 6th, the darkest day for democracy. Look, they even had a noose. They were going to hang the politicians. See, the thing is, as much as we have all this data saying that people are predicting a civil war, people think that there's going to be a civil war in their lifetime. Look, I actually count myself in that group. I think that there's at least a really good possibility of that taking place. And so do about roughly half of Americans, and that includes Democrats. There's also this reality. For those of you just listening, the headline is Americans are too pampered and neurotic to fight a civil war. Americans are too pampered and neurotic to fight a civil war. Now, this goes back to a lot of what, what Beam. I wanted to say Bean. I knew that was wrong. Louis Beam, a lot of what he was saying was, and that was back then. So if in 1979 people were too decadent to make any, to do anything really substantial, we're a lot further down the decadence road from 1979. if back then people were too comfortable just complaining and bitching but not actually doing anything about it, you know, you better believe that we're much worse off now. And part of it is because, just look, what a lot of people understand on some level is just like they were unsuccessful trying to do these little military operations back in the 70s and 80s, a lot of it would be futile. Unless you had some powerful, look, like Trump, right? If Trump had crossed the Rubicon, as everyone was saying, if Trump had refused to leave the Oval Office, if Trump had packed the military full of loyalists and just not hired people like fucking Christopher Wray and all these other dipshits, if he had just purged the federal prosecutor, like, look, when the Clintons got into the White House, they did a huge look, and so did Obama, by the way. Democrats just do that. They purged the federal government of people who weren't loyal to them. You can do that as the president. But Trump didn't do it. He thought it would look bad. It would look like he was being a dictator. Well, guess who cares? You already won the election. You're already there. You have the power. Fucking use it or lose it. And he chose the latter. But the real power, the reason why the left has the ability to just make a movie about something, for example, right? Is this is how the left fights. The left doesn't join militias . The headline is, how the newest mega donor wants to change Washington. His name is Sam Bankman-Fried. Sam Bankman-Fried has a big fortune and big plans for how to spend it, including an unusual political power building strategy. One of the biggest donors in Democratic politics this year isn't sure if he really wants to be a Democratic mega donor, at least not on the party's terms. But then part of life as Sam Bankman-Fried is about embracing paradoxes. The 30-year-old who has amassed an estimated $20 billion over the last 4 years through cryptocurrency drives a hybrid Toyota Corolla, a monk-like aesthetic, blah, blah, anyway, he's like a neckbeard. A neckbeard with fucking $20 billion throwing money at Democrats. Last election, he spent over $10 million backing President Biden. He said in the 2024 election, he's going to spend anywhere from $100 million to $1 billion. Yeah, I was listening to an old Bill Cooper broadcast. And Bill Cooper made the comment. He was really kind of pissed off. He was talking, actually, it was because I was looking up stuff on that Linda Thompson woman. And he had Linda Thompson on the air with him. And he was talking to her about one of her videos about Waco, which at the time was on VHS. And they were selling, you know, VHS copies, and because it cost a lot of money to produce video back then, it was a lot of money back then. You needed a lot of very specialized equipment. You couldn't even, you got to remember back when Waco happened, you didn't even have the ability to edit on a computer unless that computer cost like about $100,000. Like not an exaggeration, like literally like $100,000 just for basic edits. Otherwise, you were editing tape to tape, and even the tape decks that would do that, those were like $20,000 to $50,000. So it cost a lot of money to produce any kind of video, and they went and spent a lot of money producing these documentaries on Waco, and they were trying to make that money back by selling them on VHS. And groups that, well, there'd be, it'd probably be the same kind of people that would call someone like me a grifter, right? Back then, called them patriots, you know, P-A-Y, patriots, and started doing mass copies of their VHS tapes and distributing them for free. And in some instances, reselling them to recoup their costs, ironically. And Bill Cooper said, like, look, when you guys do this, you're stealing from the people doing the work. We don't have a lot of money. The left has tons of money. The right's just concerned with saving money on their taxes. The right has been underfunded in terms of, like, the radical right, the dissident right, whatever you want to call us. We've been underfunded for always. And that's why we have stuff like this going on. This is the headline, A Post-Racial World, The Last White Man, by Mohsen Hamid. A man enjoying his life in the West, made possible by white men. Calm eventually settles when the world's population turns brown and white people become a distant memory. Because he's got money to publish his book. I can't even self-publish through like Amazon or something like that without it getting banned. This guy gets published through major publishers and they gets free press write-ups in major publications like The Spectator in this case. Which, by the way, I understand why every problem starts to look like a nail when you're in this situation. You're kind of like, what can we do then? I can't just make $1 billion real quick. I can't just be like this billionaire that goes around funding right-wing causes. What's the solution then? And that's why people get frustrated and start to think of, like, well, I could do this, or I could do that. You know, it's kind of funny, though, like when we talk about Civil War and maybe being possibly put in a situation where you are up against a powerful military. There's always things like this that make me feel less worried about it.
This class has 75 students.
Next! Dad! Rick!
Including 12 females.
Rick!
One of whom ranks as class commander.
Here we go!
Look how small she is! She's like a fucking child. Look at this. That's not trick photography. In fact, if anything, she should look bigger than she is because she's in front of, like, closer to the camera. Look at this.
Ranks as class commander.
Here we go! On the right!
Being in this institution.
That's who's in charge. That's the military. Oh, God. That's the Marines. Oorah! Some fucking Mexican hobbit. Oh, good Lord. Anyway. All right, well, let's do super chats real quick. And wrap things up here. All right. J-Ray, 1981. 80,000 hires for IRS. Do you see them going after us for any little thing? Answer yes. They've already done it during the Obama administration. See, this is a perfect example of the kinds of things that Trump did wrong. During the Obama administration, it was totally obvious that the IRS was targeting Tea Party groups by not granting them the 501c3 status that they needed in order to put commercials on the air and stuff like that. They were purposely, and there was emails that proved it between the head of the IRS and IRS employees. It wasn't like, oh, we think they did that. Lois Lerner, I think was her name, was the head of the IRS at the time. And she just took the fifth when they had hearings about it. Nothing ever happened to her. Nothing ever happened to her. Or the other people involved. And many of those people stayed working there once the Trump administration took over. They didn't clean house at the IRS or anywhere. The funny thing about Biden being in the White House now is a lot of the people his when he was vice president for Obama, a lot of the same people they hired are still there. So yeah, they will absolutely use the power of the IRS to go after everybody that they can. I did see something about it's not even just like the audits and stuff like that. They posted that ad. This is the crazy thing. So look, they're going ham because like they know they're never held accountable. See, just like, here's another aspect too. In the beginning of the stream, I mentioned that the boomers, they like to relive the past because they know the future has nothing for anybody, partially thanks to them. But another thing that you have to keep in mind with people as they get closer to the end of their lives, as much in denial as boomers might be about that ever taking place, the last thing they want to do is think about dying because, yet again, that's another thing in the future. It's something that no human can avoid forever. And as you start to get to the end of your life, like Biden, like Pelosi, like Schumer, as you start to become these geriatric people in charge that have never quite sealed the deal on their big plans. Like, they've moved the football dramatically, and maybe in some of their cases they've done better than they thought they ever would. But the real hardcore commies that are real hardcore anti-white communists want to see this all the way through, and they know that the clock is ticking. And so they're going to possibly do shit that seems a little... like turn the heat up on the frog a little too fast, because they know that their time is going to be up pretty soon. They want to be around for that. No, but the one. Let me see if I can find that. There was a job listing that the IRS listed at. Here it is. So this is from the New York Post. IRS faces online uproar. See, that's the problem. It's always online uproar. Like that's the problem I've been talking about all night. Online uproar. Ooh, not some online uproar, says the IRS, as they don't care. An online job posted for special agents within the law enforcement branch of the IRS is causing a stir on social media. Not on social media, as Congress prepares to pass a spending bill that would greatly expand the federal agency. A link to a job posting for criminal investigation special agents appeared to have been briefly deleted on Wednesday following online criticism of the posting's language that reappeared back online after a Fox Business inquiry to the agency. A key requirement for applicants is that they have to be, quote, legally allowed to carry a firearm. And, quote, major duties include carry a firearm and be willing to use deadly force if necessary. This is for IRS agents. This is a real IRS job posting. They're saying that you need to be willing to use deadly force. The retirement that the agents will be willing to use, or the requirement that they'll be willing to use deadly force if necessary, drew heated criticism online. The same language appears in job postings for other enforcement agencies, such as the FBI. So, yeah, that's not good news. It's not good news. Reaver, $10, appreciate that. Hey, Devin, just watched the Dependence Day edition, and you made a comment in there that portraying the president as is impotent was part of the propaganda. I think that's more just accurate portrayal, if you ask me. Sure, Trump outsourced a bunch of the work to others, but isn't that every president? Dependence Day. That was about Independence Day, the movie? What I was getting at with that is he's the white guy, right? He's the all-American white guy. And they're showing him as completely incompetent, not because they're not making a comment about the political forces in Washington. They're making a comment about, or rather, the metaphor is, here's the incompetent white guy. What I was getting at is, the president in that movie, the white, you know, all-American president, was the same white guy that was in every advertisement during that time in the 90s. You know, the stupid dad that, you know, oh, the wife has to change the tire because he's just dumb and he doesn't know anything. That's what I was getting at with that. Is he was just like the weak, useless guy that all the powerful women around him don't really need to have there. Quebec, $25, appreciate that. Lots of bees. Oh, you didn't put a nose icon. I swear to God, that was like, I was like, oh God, how is this happening to me? They're usually very nice bees, usually. J. Ray, 1981, $5, appreciate that. I'm in Las Vegas. You get more rain during the August rains than the rest of the year, basically. Yeah, that's the desert. That's the American Southwest. This is when you get all the rain. I mean, you'll during the winter you get some rains too, and during the spring you get like maybe a couple of good rains. But you know, this is the big water time. Like, you know, this is where you get most of your rainfall. Nationalist Homestead, $5, appreciate that. Appreciate your work. Made a banner with QR codes to Defiant and PatCon videos. Wanted to share some of the stuff we do in, I think, California or Canada? I guess, oh, California. Appreciate any feedback. Videos are all very short. River cleanup. Okay, cool. Let me, look here. Okay, cool, yeah. I'll play this. If I can find it here, where'd it go? I'm going to try this again. Okay, that should be there. Why is this not saving? God, I fucking hate Windows so much. I hate it so very, very much. Okay, there it is, I think. All right, so this is you're basically cleaning up after all the caravans that come and dirty up parts of California, and that happens all across. Speaking of the American Southwest, this happens all across the American Southwest too. All of Arizona, Texas, New Mexico, the border's just filled with like just trash and fucking, you know, it looks like that. Like the desert just looks like that for miles and miles and miles and miles. So good on you for doing what you can to clean that up. And look, that it, that's a good way of getting people. See, that's a positive thing you can get people to get behind. This is making this kind of optics, if you will. This is relatable. People see this stuff and they're like, oh yeah, that's something I can get behind, cleaning up stuff. And in fact, that you can even get people involved. Like, what do you think would be easier to do? Telling people, hey, you want to come out to this field and burn a cross and shout death to the gooks with me, or something like this. Hey, do you want to help me pick up trash and clean up this mess that these immigrants leave in their wake as they come into our country illegally? You know, in fact, you could even just bill it as like an environmentalist thing. And then once the people are out there helping out, you start dropping the red pills. They're like, look, you know, this is the mess that they leave because they don't have any respect for our country. So, good job. The extra dimensional. If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered. I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. The issuing power should be taken from the banks and restored to the people to whom the property belongs. The only solution is a bloody revolution. Well, I'll tell you what, that is kind of why they can afford to make movies. That's why they can, bankroll a lot of these projects. They can bankroll stuff like that book, you know, like this guy's book. And they seem to have endless funding for lawyers for when the rare occasions that Antifa or Black Lives Matter protesters go to jail. They've got an army of lawyers that, you know, jump in and defend them for free. And you know, they just have more resources. And part of that is because our opponents control the money supply. So, yeah, absolutely. But you're not going to find someone that's, in fact, you're going to have a hard time finding anyone that can even understand that concept. But even if you did, you have an even tougher time finding someone that would be willing to go after it. I don't think Trump's going to go against the banks or really anyone that's in a position to where they could get anywhere remotely close to the White House. And in terms of your other solution you're talking about, yeah, but that comes with a lot of problems too. Harmless G, although Peter Thiel is a gay Silicon Valley billionaire, he agrees with you that human civilization peaked around 1970 with the moon missions and the ability to get the Concorde to work. What do you think is his endgame? I don't care what his endgame is because he doesn't understand that the dicks don't go in assholes. I mean, that's a pretty basic thing. I'm sorry. Like, I cannot trust someone who's that neurodivergent from me. Let me use one of their fancy terms. Anyone who's so neurodivergent from me that they're fucking guys in the ass. I can't relate to that. I can't relate to that, and I don't want their help. I mean, I'll take their money, but I don't want their help. You know, I think that we've seen again and again and again and again, especially MAGA has learned the hard way in a lot of instances, where if you have a gay guy in charge, what happens? Specifically gay Jews. Postmaster, Sandy Hook was cover for a burned witness location program, and January 6th was cover for a burned extra-dimensional underground facility relocation. What? Sandy Hook was cover for a burned witness location program, and January 6th was cover for a burned extra-dimensional underground facility relocation. Well, I would believe the first one before I'd believe the second one there. and I'll tell you what, there's a lot of glowies in Sandy Hook. There's a lot of question marks, in my opinion, as to that whole situation. Reaver, $5. To the martyr point, I think that this kind of phenomenon is new. Wilhelm Gustloff in Switzerland had some effect on NS Germany. I can't think of anything after that, but I know that there were some prior, so I think that's the last one. Last thing, like, Americans don't even know who that fucking guy is. When was the last right-wing Western, you know, English-speaking world martyr? I mean, there's stories, right? There's stories about, like, about Ruby Ridge. Like, people will say, oh, Ruby Ridge, remember Ruby Ridge? But it's more of like a warning. It's not like, we must fight to avenge the Weavers. You know, like, that's never the way it's viewed. You don't have murals being painted of the Weavers. Or of anyone. You don't have marches with tons of white women posing for Instagram photos. The right doesn't do martyrs for some reason. Now, I suspect that if they went after Trump, and I know it's kind of a joke to call Trump right wing, but look, it would be very, I mean, that would be useful in that if they were to assassinate Trump, or even if they didn't assassinate him, they just lock him up, right? I think at that point you would have a right, quote unquote, right wing martyr. Because a lot of the people who are right wing would be like, fuck it, let's use it. And all the people who you can't get off their ass to like stop white genocide would be out of their fucking recliners because they locked up Boomer Jesus, or they assassinated Boomer Jesus. If anything's going to get these people out of their chairs, it would be that. I think it's because the right, this is a big difference between the right and the left. The right wants to have a strong hierarchy. They want to have a strong alpha that they fall in line behind. And the left doesn't think that way. The left would rather have all of these mini causes, because they want to be inclusive. They value things like inclusivity and diversity, right? So why wouldn't they, in terms of what drives them? But I think it would have to be that. It would have to be the de facto leader of the Republican Party being assassinated or hauled into jail. And look, I don't even think that's outside the realm of possibility right now. That would certainly accelerate things. Early 20s Zoomer here. I have a date with an average-looking 19-year-old, seemingly good Christian conservative girl, who seems to have a very high verbal IQ coming up this week. Wish me luck. Any advice? I'm used to dating average Zoomer girls. Godless whores. I don't know. Like, it's... I haven't been a... I'm not a Zoomer, so I've never dated a Zoomer girl. I don't know. I would say, I'll just say, give you the normal advice. Chicks dig confidence. So there you go. And open doors for her. Women like that. If she's worth it. If she gets offended, that's a good filter. If you open doors for her and she's offended, then she's a psycho. Or if she has any reaction other than liking it, she's a psycho. Postmaster, Judicial Watch, do nothing, just watch. Well, yeah, they're, but that's what they're there for. I mean, they're just there. They're like a, that's like saying WikiLeaks sucks because they don't do anything. You know, it's like, well, they're not. That's not what they're there for. Judicial Watch was producing the kind of intel that made public a lot of the stuff that the Trump administration should have used to then do action. Now, look, I'm not like a big fan of Judicial Watch, but I'm a fan of some of their work. And I think that they're really one of the best things that we got in terms of lawfare. What else do we have? The lawsuits that they bring... Yeah, they're not putting people in jail, but they're not, they can't. They're not, they can't do criminal cases. They're not the DOJ. All they can do is sue for FOIA releases and civil cases and stuff like that. Now, you could make the argument that maybe they should be more like the SPLC and they should go after say Antifa for RICO and for basically racketeering, like basically do what the SPLC did with all these groups in the 80s and 90s. And I suspect the only reason why they don't, and why no group does, is that, if you think about it, the members of Antifa are just rich kid or rich people's kids. Usually Jewish. And the system never goes after its own. But I also just don't know. I don't know enough about the law to know what legal strategies they could even, you know, use for that. I mean, and plus, like, who specifically would you sue? I mean, it's not like there's a... That's the other difference, too, is the Christian Identity, they had, like, an actual camp, like a physical camp. And there's not, like, the Antifa headquarters that you could go to, right? So how would you even prove who's a member of Antifa, quote-unquote, where all these groups that the SPLC took out, I mean, there was an official membership list, and they had a physical location, and, you know. So I wouldn't blame Judicial Watch for that. Avdimat Kalishnikova, I think the reason the right never rallies is most on the right are brainwashed by Zog, or Zog propaganda. They love entertainment made by Jews, and the vast majority of Jews are on the left. Sure, some Jews are right-wing, especially in Israel, but they want the goyim ruled, oppressed by leftist governments. Yeah, they're just... Yeah, that, well, I'll tell you what. They don't... They want to be, like... if you're talking about, like, the right-wing NPCs, because whether you like it or not, I hear a lot of people say, well, you know, only 3% of the people fought in the Revolutionary War, and you don't need to convince everyone, and blah, 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 blah. You know what? That's being naive. You still need to have some public sentiment. It doesn't mean that, like, if it came to a kinetic confrontation that you would need all the normies on your side. Obviously not. But it you would need them on your side. You know, what would they say? Hearts and minds, right? You need to win them over, hearts and minds, or you're fucked. And you're kind of fucked in any kind of kinetic confrontation right now, too. But yeah, there's not a whole lot of will to oppose their own genocide, which is, you know, it is what it is. J-Ray, 1981, he blinks both eyes. What's with the fucking left eyebrow? What are you talking about? The guy? The shooter? Let me see. I think his right eyebrow looks weirder than his left eyebrow. Like, he looks like he's in a constant state of surprise. Honda Bear, $5. Black gay baby of Forrest Gump and Forrest Whitaker interviewed by Molester Holt. Shit, I need me a 12-piece bucket for this mess. Yeah, this guy is like... every stereotype you can imagine rolled into one person. Postmaster, why isn't Tom flexing his muscles while explaining what they recently watched judicially? Well, I'll tell you what. The one you want to see some cringe. He is super ripped, but you want to see some cringe, go to the Judicial Watch Instagram page. It's literally just him wearing, like, muscle shirts and, like, flexing. It's pretty gay. But it probably gets a lot of cat lady money. Campy LeBlacter, $1. Ashley's mother was at the D.C. jail for a protest last night. 500,000 people showed up. Just kidding, it was 12. There was some video of last night. Yeah, 12 people. Let me see if I can get this video to pull up here.
Okay, we are outside.
Oh, damn it. Why did it do that? I can't believe it just killed my chat window. How do I go back to my chat window? All right, back to the chat window here. Okay, where's your thing go? Where's Campula Blacter? Campula Blacter, where are you at? There you are. All right, let me see if I can download this. Odyssey is usually pretty good about letting you just download a file. I usually just have a link to it.
The Washington, D.C.
Healing Hate. All right, let's see. It's still downloading? It's because it's gonna be a while before I can download that for some. It's okay. I can't download that right now. It's 2 fucking gigabytes. But maybe I'll play some of that for next stream. But yeah, 12 people showed up. Abtemat Kalishnikova, the brutal truth on Ashley Babbitt is she should have married. I think she did marry. Didn't she have a husband? Had and raised many good white children instead of being a strong woman pursuing an Air Force career. Too many white women are trying to be like men and ruining their lives and hurting our people. Well, I agree with that part of it. You know, I was thinking about this. Some of the more extreme people, not just on the right, but on the left, happen to be women in the last, I'd say, couple decades, including that woman that I was talking about named Linda Thompson, who was literally calling for militias to go march on Washington and arrest senators. And I was trying to wrap my head around that and think, like, why is it that when you watch these Black Lives Matter protests, it's women with megaphones? And even when you watch like the trucker marches and, you know, the right wing Q-tard stuff, you see a lot of soccer moms that seem to be kind of running the show. And it occurred to me that women have never been punched in the face. And no one takes them seriously. I mean, yeah, we all have to pretend like we take them seriously and, oh, yeah, we're all equal. But deep down, in the same way, you find me a leftist who really thinks that black people are operating on the same level that they are. I mean, come on. Even they get it. That's why they don't want, you know, voter ID and stuff like that. That's why they always come up with something. They call it racist. Because deep down they know that, yeah, blacks are not going to get off their asses and get the fucking voter ID, and then they won't be able to vote. And yeah, voter fraud and all that other stuff too, obviously. But when they say things are racist, what they're really saying is that they're aware of the racial differences and how whatever rule you are proposing is going to have a disproportionate effect on other populations because they're simply not as capable of following those rules as you are. That's why, I mean, they gussy it up or whatever, but deep down, that's why they say it. Because not all of their beliefs are totally rooted in fantasy land. There is there's got to be always some kind of kernel of truth in there, no matter how, you know, deep it is. And women, you know, no one really takes them. No one finds them as intimidating as men. And so when you have a woman who is woman I'm probably going to cover in another episode, the Linda Thompson or whatever, or those women that are leading these protests, these BLM protests with these megaphones or whatever. Partially why that's going on is because women always get away with more because no one really takes them that seriously or sees them as a serious threat. So because they feel less threatened, they react less to them. The other part of it is the women, the reason why they feel so emboldened to do these sort of things and suggest these sort of things and to want to go ham more often is no one's ever punched them in the face. You know, they're more wanting to Fed post, for example, because they've never been in a situation like they're proposing that they put you in when they make these suggestions and stuff. And I think that applied to Ashley Babbitt. The reason why she was at the front, she was the one smashing through that plate glass when the men around her weren't, was because of those two things. Now, unfortunately for her, there was someone that would see her as a threat. You know, this dipshit. Or maybe he just wanted to bag himself a white woman. Who knows, right? But the reason I think she did what she did is she just hadn't been punched in the face. She'd never had like real consequences. And look, there were cops standing right next to her with rifles, aware of what she was doing, not stopping her. Because again, she's a woman. She doesn't really pose a big threat. Unless you're this guy. Then she's the scariest thing you've ever seen. Like that old South Park, those hunting episodes. Like, oh no, they're coming right for us. Harmless G, Elon Musk's father, Errol Musk, has recently been doing a few podcast interviews. I recommend watching some and see what your read on the guy is. Ed Dutton is trying to get him on the show. Well, that'd be kind of interesting. He's old money. He's old money. He's kind of a weird, he's had a weird life. He's old money and enough money to be eccentric about it. NGO, all right, Postmaster, $5. NGOs all over are giving them preferential housing through property managers that have plans to vacate from their properties and companies here. Then shit hits the fan, but wait, hold on. NGOs all over are giving them I don't know what you mean by them, preferential housing through their property managers and that have plans to vacate from their properties and companies here when shit hits the fan. But until then, they're replacing Americans' rental resources with refugees from counties, I think countries. American is a proxy collapsing all over. It is an empire building. I don't know what you mean by all that, but I think maybe what you mean is if there's declining rents, the government is subsidizing, putting refugees into rentals, and I mean, there's going to be graft no matter. I mean, the level of, we're at third world levels of corruption at this point. Let's see here. Splitter Trace, $1. I've worked with Vietnamese before. Many are decent people, mostly the younger ones. They can be underhanded and highly ethnocentric. They also really like to go for federal government jobs. Yeah, look, I'm not saying that they're bad or anything. I'm just saying they have their own country. And I'm sorry they lost their war that we injected ourselves into. I don't see how that makes us responsible for their future. Or their destiny. And accepting them into our country. Well, going over there in the first place was a mistake. And then accepting them into our country was the second. By that point, more than the second mistake. But, you know, another mistake. J-Ray, 1981, $10. Appreciate that. Something I hate is when someone says we when talking about the U.S. because it's not the Republic, It's the Jewish oligarchs who rule our government. But when I think the Republic pays the taxes that fund these pieces of shit, so yes, we are a part of the problem. God forgive us. And then another $10. Something I hate is when... All right. Oh, no, it just listed it twice for some reason. That's weird. Yeah, you're funding all this stuff. Tax dollars were going towards Drag Queen Story Hour in many places. Tennis Nuts, $1. Check out The Third Adam by Spencer Smith. The Third Adam by Spencer Smith. Damn Bigfoot, $1. Appreciate that. Do you think putting Vietnamese migrants in a southern town full of veterans was some type of setup? I mean, I don't know. They put them all throughout the country in the same way that they've moved a lot of these illegal immigrants that have crossed the border into northern states. And, you know, like they were pumping Mexicans into places like Maine. But how that was all decided on, I'm not sure. It certainly wasn't agreed. You know, the locals didn't vote on that. They had no say in that. Harmless G. I would recommend doing the 2015 movie Deserito, made by a Mexican director, but I think it would be hard to do without attracting too much federal attention. The movie is one giant Fed post. Here's the trailer. All right, let's see. Let's see if I can download that. I'm going to load my little app here for that. Teja recently came across the documentary The Jewish Journey, America, by Andrew Goldberg, and immediately thought of you. The Jewish Journey, America. I have never heard of that. Maybe we'll take a look at that too. Is that the, yeah, all right. Let's start that up. Get that downloading. The Jewish Journey, America. Let me look this up. Good old Andrew Goldberg. 2015. This might be interesting. It says, the Jewish Journey, America, traces Jewish immigration to America through the centuries. The film is narrated by Emmy Award-winning journalist Martha Teichner of CBS News. Unlike other immigrant stories, Jewish American history has been rooted in an ever... changing old country, South America, Europe, Russia, North Africa, and the Middle East, to name a few. Interviews with top scholars in Jewish history, notable, blah, blah, blah. All right, well, it could be interesting. Retarded Faggot, $1. Another great stream tonight. Thank you for the hard work. Well, I appreciate that. And then... oh, look, we got it. We got a big money. You know, I don't have them loaded. But I designed some fancy well, I did that wrong. Anyway, I'll give you a different one. How about this?
You better help me solve my problem. I'ma get this money and rob them.
I actually made some fancy little animations for big donations that you can, and I'm going to do this thing where you can unlock them. So like I don't know how many, you know, every whatever many dollars, but I want to actually unlock different levels. I made a few of them. I don't have them all done yet and loaded in here though, but you can look forward to that fun stuff. They're pretty funny. They're a lot funnier than just Old Dirty Bastard. Fino-Hungarian Imperialist, very generous donation of $100. Ever wonder why you and all of America knows about historical footnote from early colonial Salem? Ever notice the story you were told was clearly intentional or intentional theme in coda? Ever heard of a man by Arthur Miller and his work as a playwright? The Crucible is just the tip of the iceberg. Yeah, in fact, the Crucible was required reading at my high school. And for those of you who I don't know if that was nationwide, I would assume it was pretty widespread. The Crucible was a play written by a Jew about the Salem witch trials. And basically that's what popularized the whole witch hunt stuff, which, by the way, Trump uses all the time. Trump's always talking about witch hunts. Where there it puts forth this idea that basically white Christians are just crazy. And they're afraid of different people, and they're willing to murder innocents because of their fear of the unknown. You know, no, obviously there was tons of projection going on there, and yeah, big time. That was required. In fact, we didn't have to. Not only did we have to, we had to perform it. We had to in high school. It was as part of the drama class. We had to perform the Crucible, and I think we might. I mean, I wasn't in it, but I think we had to. Our class had to put it on for like middle school kids or something like that. Because I mean, we had at the school I went to, there was like the drama department was huge. There was like this huge stage and like, it was like pretty legit. Like they put on big plays there and everything. And, I'm pretty sure that after they, like we all had to read it together in class, like a table reading, and then we had to read it over and over and over again because they were casting for it. And then we had to put it on. And like, if you weren't in it, like, I think I had to do some kind of backstage garbage. And, you know, so you, by the time you perform it for these kids, you'd heard the story a billion fucking times. And then so did the kids who were in middle school at the time. They had to, like, watch it. And then in a few years when they're in high school, they probably had to do it, you know? Yeah, that's a big one. I mean, I don't know if it's still like that, but that's how it was when I was in school. Thank you again for the very generous donation there. Florida man, $5. Greetings, Devin. On my most recent trip to the grocery store, I noticed that... I'm not going to do it. I noticed something. While the cost of everything is shooting up, the cost of beer and wine is basically the same as it was 3 or more years ago. How convenient. Yeah, I've noticed that. You know what else is the same, like, cost as it was in high school? Weed. Weed somehow has not gotten any more expensive since the 90s. Like, the prices haven't changed. It's been exactly the same for as long as I've been, at least as long as I've been alive. I find that odd. Okay. Dan the Man, $5. Appreciate that. After watching your Satanic Panic episode, I've been paying closer attention to the media's attitude towards Satanism, and I was reminded about the infatuation with Amanda Knox. Do you think this was a case of actual Satanic Panic? I can't understand the prosecutor's motivation. I've never looked heavily into that, so I don't know. I mean, I know the case. I know what you're talking about, but I never really looked into that at all, so I couldn't tell you. I don't think that they ever found, like, it's my understanding they never found, like, a real killer if it's not her, right? So I don't know. Tennis Nuts, $1, appreciate that. Do you ever listen to Paul from Pockets of the Future? The sound of his voice makes me think he might be a fag. I don't know. I've never heard him. I don't know what he sounds like. The extra dimensional $1. Appreciate that. Yes, we really are up against a bunch of retarded faggots and have zero excuses. That's who is in charge. Well, yeah. I mean, they do have endless amounts of resources, though. That's kind of a big deal. Olivia, $10. Appreciate that. Hi, Devin. Have you ever heard of the strange case of Susan Cabot, the Jewish actress hired by the CIA in the 1960s to befriend King Hussein of Jordan? She ended up having his child, a dwarf. I'm not a midget Jew. She was beaten to death by her dwarfs. Is this real? She was beaten to death by her dwarf son and seriously disturbed by all the growth hormone treatment. What? I don't know. That can't be real. Let me look this up. What the fuck? Like, she's a literal... Oh, okay, so... The fact that this is the photo they use for her? This just gets weirder. Alright, let me bring this up here. Like, she's a literal cat lady. Like, this is the photo they use of her. Hold on, let me see if the other stuff you said was true. All right, let me see here. She was an American actress. Blah, blah, mid-50s, blah, blah. All right. She spent the following two decades largely in seclusion. All right, well, hold on. Off-Broadway theater. In the early 1960s, she made a 1970 television appearance on the series Bracken's World. By the 1980s, Cabot was suffering from severe mental illness, including depression, suicidal thoughts, and irrational phobias. Totally not neurotic at all. On December 10th, 1986, Cabot's only child, 22-year-old Timothy Roman, bludgeoned her to death in Los Angeles with a weightlifting bar. Hold on. Let me see if I can find a picture of the son here. There's no pictures of the son, but it does say which is a shame. That's a damn shame because, you know.
Pick up this midget, you know, he's very, very well dressed. Italian suit, good looking.
Had a beautiful tall blonde.
Was it a lady midget?
No, the guy was a midget.
All. Life's got me mad, but if I had a midget, I'd be glad to watch him jump around on my Nintendo Power Pad.
I think we all would have a better life if we owned a little pet midget. Unless you're this woman, apparently. No, I've never heard of this. Harmless G, that Sam Bankman-Fried guy is the son of two Stanford University Law School professors. Yeah, I know. Fucking, yeah. Never underestimate how maladaptive the ideas of intelligent people can be, especially the Jewish ones. As Jared Taylor said, some ideas are so ridiculous, only highly intelligent people can believe them. Exactly. Oh, holy shit. I thought that the total was an error, what I get sometimes, but apparently, I was mistaken. Apparently, we got like
my bitch better have my money.
We got a big old donation here.
But give him the money. Hey,
baby, I got your money. Don't you worry. I said, hey.
You're getting all of them.
You better help me solve my problem. I'ma get this money and rob them.
There you go. Now I'm mad that I don't have the ones I was making, because this would be the perfect one. Black Flag with the huge big dick donation of $500. Unless you're a woman, then you do not have a big dick, I would hope. Good evening, Devin. Long time listener. Finally able to catch you live. Your content is top notch. I'm in my early 30s, started in my mid-20s, and have fundamentally changed my life based on your advice. Thank you for everything you've done for me and for my family. Keep up the good work, brother. Well, I really appreciate that. You're keeping the internet going for a few months for sure. So that's very awesome. Always could use a little help, and that's a lot of help. So let's hear it for Black Flag. Maybe I should play a Black Flag song. I can't think of any. You know, I know it's an old punk band, but I'm trying to remember if they might be like commies. I don't remember. A lot of those old punk bands were commies. But yeah, that's very awesome. Very awesome. Appreciate that. Ryan is cool. $5. Speaking from experience, anytime a girl in the military does something, even just barely competent, she gets put on a pedestal. Every higher up has this insane delusion that they aren't just whores with an attitude and can actually contribute to the military. The American people seem to fall for it too. Well, you know, the thing that drove me crazy was the new show, Tim Allen's new show, where they were trying to be like, oh, look, he's so conservative. They canceled him, so he had to make his own show. And look, he's like so based. He's like a ham radio operator on a show and everything. I'd never seen the show. I had known that he had a new show and that like he was a ham radio operator in the show and whatever, and that he was trying to play a conservative role. And then I saw it on a TV at a place where I was picking something up. It was just on the TV. And the first thing I saw was his daughter was in the military. And I was just like, really? This is conservative now? Is your daughter's in the military? Yeah. Anyway. I knew a woman that joined the military, and now she's a tranny. Now she's a tranny. So that's always fun. Damn Bigfoot, $3. Did you come up with a name to merge Satanism and libertarianism? What about Lucitary? I think just calling them. What did I say last stream? I think just call him Luciferian. Just be like, oh yeah, you're Luciferian. We don't need to mix it. They're the same thing. All of our attempts to mixing it have just come up with like goofy sounding words. So Luciferian, you don't even need isms. Just be like, oh yeah, you're a Luciferian. Oh, okay. Oh, you're a Luciferian? I've heard about those guys. Yeah. And just do it casual like, and then if they try to call you out on it, just be like, show me where you disagree with them. Show me one thing where you have a different opinion than the literal Satanists. Glock 23, $2, appreciate that. Low IQ Negro with big eyes who murdered Ashley Babbitt had been reprimanded twice for leaving his issued Glock pistol on the back of a toilet in a public restroom at the Capitol. The Capitol has the best security affirmative action can employ. Exactly. Everyone knows this low IQ idiot is the only reason why she's dead. And they'll never, ever, ever fucking... I mean, he's... Like I said, he's probably... I mean, he's got a pension. That guy's taken care of for life. So... It is what it is. All right, guys. Well, that is the last of the Super Chats. I'm going to go to regular chat here just for a second. We might as well try to get it up to 3 hours. We're almost there. Let's see here. What are you guys talking about? Henry Ford says, maybe black people could set up a burner YouTube account, have announcements, go on Odyssey, we'll meet up there. Who says anything about a burner YouTube account? Maybe I'll join the FBI so I can get paid to watch these streams. Yeah, I often wonder how many people... I'm sure in some automated way I'm being monitored, but I wonder if there's actually like a guy, you know, or a lesbian, you know, tranny, some midget. Let's see here. Oh, did the connection die and I just didn't notice it? Oh, you gotta be fucking kidding me. When did it fucking die? I've been keeping an eye on that. I mean, it says it's going for me. God damn it. Well, I guess I'll have to upload the recording. It never went into the red. I keep an eye on that fucking thing. Well, let me take a look here. See if it's dead for me on the... That's fucking bullshit. I'm going to hit reset stream. See, this is Odyssey. The fact that they have to have a reset stream button. I wonder how many times it's going to do that before it actually starts going. Here we go. Is it back? I'm going to refresh it here. I can't believe that. If it wasn't working this whole time. Yeah, it's back. Hey, how long... When did it fucking... when did it die? I had no indication on this side at all that it wasn't working. I recorded... I mean, I've been recording this whole thing, so... You know... It's not like lost, but like that fucking drives me crazy that it wasn't, that I was just talking to no one that whole time. When did it kick off, guys? How long has it been like that? A long time ago? What the fuck? That's insane. Well, there's still 320 of you watching somehow. I can't believe that. Well, I sorry guys, I'm actually just wrapping up. I didn't realize that it was. I mean, I've been doing it this whole time, and people are saying 15, 20. Well, that's not as bad. 20 minutes, 15 minutes, 30 minutes. Did I get through like the PatCon stuff? Was I doing super chats yet? Yeah, I was talking to myself. I have no indication that it's not working over here. Like zero. It doesn't say, I mean, OBS didn't change at all. It said everything was fine on my side. So I was doing super chats. Okay, well, all right. Okay, I was talking about his eyebrow. Okay. Yeah, well, I mean, that sucks. I recorded the whole thing, so I'll just have to sit here and upload the recording after the stream here. Yeah, there's no way for me to know that. And that, I think, isn't just Space Internet. And the reason I say that is Odyssey has a reset stream button. Like it literally says on their thing, if you're having trouble starting a stream or if your stream shows that you're live but you aren't, try to reset it. It's like, well, why do you need that button? You know, like no one else has that button. Why would you need a reset stream? Because it's going somewhere. Like OBS is streaming to something. Right? And yeah, I don't see the F's in chat if I'm doing super chats because I have the super chat tab open. So I can't see the normal chat and the super chats at the same time. So I don't see any of the, if you guys did F's in chat, I didn't see any of that stuff. Someone says DLive is dead as fuck. Well, DLive demonetized me. With their gay fucking coins. Well, I can't watch that on a... My internet's bad enough. The reason I don't watch the stream on another device, which I would normally do, right? I know what you're saying. That's a good idea, but... My stream has connection problems as it is. So if I start streaming it, like I watch the stream, that's killing bandwidth that I already don't have, you know? DLive doesn't even pay if you are monetized. Oh, they used to. Black Flag donated 500 but left the stream. He said he did not have a question for you and just wanted to support the stream. Well, that's cool. Well, if he watches the replay, I played all three of the money sounds and gave him a good... long thank you. It'll like I recorded everything. It'll just take a minute because I'll have to re-upload the file. I can't just use the file that's... Well, I don't know. I don't think I can use the file that's on Odyssey's server. I mean, like I said, it's streaming to somewhere. OBS says it's going somewhere. But yeah, Black Flag with the big dono. That was awesome. That was very cool. That keeps the shitty Space Internet going for about 5 months. you need a trusted friend to text you or message you when the stream goes down. Yeah, I usually have all my stuff like that turned off. Maybe someone was messaging me. No, the person that usually messages me didn't message me. Yeah, you guys missed it. I even played like the midget song. What did I think about the Lucitarian term? No, actually, that was right after that is when I realized that I wasn't on because I finished the super chats. Basically, what I was saying was We should just call them Luciferians, and not even try to mix two words. It doesn't. It's more than $100 a month. They upped it because of they literally said thanks to inflation, it's $115 a month for space internet. So it's technically not quite 5 months of internet, but it's, you know, it's almost 5 months. Did I play the White Tuba rap? I don't know what the White Tuba rap is. When does the book 2 hit the shelves? Well, I don't know if it'll hit shelves, but it'll be available in time for Christmas. That's the best. That's the best deadline I can give you. Some might ask, well, if you know if feds are watching, why do you troll Jews? The answer is that it's the one thing they can't stand the most, being mocked. Yeah, they don't have a sense of humor about it, but a lot of feds are just goys. When do you think the recording will be up in a couple hours? Yeah, I'm gonna shut it down now, and then I will upload it. It takes a little bit of time. Like I'll double check and see if the one that Odyssey has on the server is, you know, I'll check the length and see if it's like in line with my recording. If it's not, then I'll just upload the recording. My guess is it's not. And if I have to upload the recording, it'll probably take about an hour or so for it to get working. Putin blowing that Tesla faggot shit out of the space would be hilarious. Well, I hope he doesn't, because I'm using the internet. I bet Antelope Hill would print it. I think they would too, but I need to talk to him. And I also think that my question about that is I think they switched to a subscription model, and I don't know how that works. Like, I don't know how that works for someone that would have a book on there, you know? All right, guys. Well, I'm going to wrap it up here. Sorry for that blackout. I'll try to keep maybe I can open up two chat windows next time, so I can always have a chat window up. Even if I'm doing super chats, I need dual screen chats or something like that. I can't stream it on another device and not have it. Well, I don't know. We could try it. Maybe we'll try it on a stream that's not as info packed, like more like an AMA kind of a stream, like a cozier stream. And then if it doesn't work, it's not a big deal. But, next stream is going to have a lot of stuff that I didn't want to get into tonight, just because we didn't have enough time because it was one of the things, it would add like an extra at least 2 hours to it. We only covered about half of an episode of that Healing Hate. But the next one's going to have a lot more meat and potatoes to it. So it's going to probably be a little bit longer. And so hopefully the internet works. So tune in for that Wednesday. Thanks for being here. And get one more big thanks to Black Flag for the big donation there. And sorry that I didn't realize that I wasn't online when I was thanking you earlier. So with that, for Black Pill, I am, of course, Devin Stack.
Just got into our newsroom. You can see the moments before the crash. You will see a blue Mini Cooper fly by on the street here leading up into this house. You can see that actress Anne Heche was going at a high rate of speed.
doesn't look that good, but yeah, it does look terrible. We'll just see if maybe they're just moving him out of there, or if they put him in an ambulance. That's some sort of sign, but yes. So basically, the activity that we were looking for, that anxious or that quick moving that was going on the other side of the vehicle. Oh my gosh, he's completely alive. He was trying to get away. He was. I don't know. That was really, really strange. And that's what we love about breaking news here in Los Angeles, is right when you think you've seen it all,